to Ben Fred Friday on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Chris Raby, pinch hitting for Danny Mac. I said the only way that this first week at Scoops with Danny Mac is going to end is one way, and that is Ben Fredrickson laying takes at my feet and just really dishing about what's going on as the Major League Baseball postseason former Cardinal MVP trains roll around the American League.
Well, you're like the Randy Arozarena of Scoops with Danny Mac. You show up unannounced in October and then just start dominating. And now I can't get away from you.
Listen, dude, Randy Arozarena was not unannounced to Cardinals fans. He had such an incredible year last year, an incredible year, and got better and better as the competition got better and better, and he went from AA to AAA to the point that, like, we were talking about him on the post-game shows before he got called up because they needed offense so bad when he was in the minors. But, you know, wouldn't want to give him any runs.
I like that. Yeah, no, you're right. And the headlines that are coming out from Tampa are now like, who is Randy Arozarena? And all the Cardinals fans are in St. Louis are like, well, let me tell you who he is.
Dude, that happens, like, so often with sports. I guess sports is the best example because, like, we never talk about the prospects that get shipped off that, like, weren't amounting to anything. Nobody goes back and says, like, man, Brett Wallace, boy, did the Cardinals sell high on him, you know? But it goes the opposite way, and then we can all sit around and say, you know, listen, I knew that he was going to be a star, but the front office just didn't give him a chance. And there is some truth, I think, to both sides, but unfortunately for Cardinal fans who don't have a team to watch in the postseason right now, there are a lot of reminders of, A, the Cardinals' deficiencies, and, B, the fact that the guys who could fill those deficiencies were on the team a couple of years ago.
I think it's a few things, Chris, and one is that for years and years, the Cardinals really didn't have to worry about any players the team traded away because it was like a curse. If you were traded away by the Cardinals, then you were never going to be any good, really, and it kind of has started to shift a little bit now. And really, you know, I don't even include like Randall Grichuk or Stephen Biscotti in that group. Those guys have more or less been the same guys, just with maybe different amounts of playing opportunity. It really kind of started with Tommy Pham, who has been, you know, when he's healthy, has been a really good hitter for other teams. And then it's really capitalizing this playoff with both Arozarena and Luke Voit being in the same series. And, you know, we can go back and revisit those trades. And really, they're impossible to judge until they play out in finality, which will be Matthew Liberatore. The Voit trade, it's tough because he's hitting cleanup for the Yankees and wins the home run race, although the Cardinals are pretty happy with Paul Goldschmidt. So you can go back and forth on it both ways. I really think it's a couple questions. It's one, why do certain players hit better for other teams? And that gets us into Marcelo Ozuna, who was not traded but was not really pursued as a free agent and clearly hit better in both Miami and now Atlanta than he did in St. Louis. And the other thing would be, why do some of these players seem to be pursued more by other teams than they were valued by the Cardinals? What's clicking in some of this prospect evaluation, but also some of this instruction? So those are the two questions, the hard questions the Cardinals have to answer this season. Why are guys coming here and struggling here, but then performing better elsewhere? And do we need to maybe recalibrate some things on our player evaluation front that makes us make a decision, like giving more opportunity to a guy like Tyler O'Neill and less opportunity to a guy like Randy Arozarena? I think those are fair questions that the Cardinals have to be looking for answers for this offseason.
Yeah, and I also wonder, Ben, like, is there some sort of discernible difference in the way, the process, whatever it is, that pitching is evaluated, scouted, drafted, developed, brought to the big league level, you know, buy low on guys that end up being incredible contributors versus position players? Because, you know, the track record for the pitching speaks for itself in every aspect. Drafting guys, developing guys, guys out of high school, guys out of college, converting guys from other positions, late round guys, early round guys, signing guys from international, whether it be Latin America or from Asia. Like, they have consistently just been one of the best organizations in baseball from a pitching standpoint. So what is the divide? What is the difference? Is it as simple as saying there's a difference and they need to figure out how to rectify that when it comes to evaluating the lineup versus the pitching?
Yeah, and some of this is where they draft, right? I mean, it's easier to draft good hitting prospects when you draft earlier, and the Cardinals don't usually get to do that because of the fact that they're annually competitive, which makes it that much more key, Chris, to not miss on prospects that you either draft or sign internationally, to not trade them out before you know what they can or cannot do. And I think that's what makes Voit and a Rosarena especially so painful for Cardinals fans is it's proof that there was a team out there that saw a fit, that saw an upside, maybe more so than the Cardinals did. And the Cardinals don't usually get burned like that. So whether Matthew Liberatore turns out to be an outstanding player, and while Gallegos is very good, the Cardinals are, for years now, have struggled to produce homegrown, you know, internally developed hitting prospects and talents. And now they have two that are playing elsewhere. And that's going to, it needs to lead to some soul searching. It also needs to lead to, you know, an analysis of, I think, the instruction. Why is, you know, Marcell Ozuna being that guy that the Cardinals thought they traded for? Why is his time in St. Louis as kind of a mediocre at best cleanup hitter, bookended by an outstanding year in Miami and an outstanding year in Atlanta? It's tough when the team that is really what was holding it back all season was its slugging percentage, used to have both the AL and the NL home run leaders on its roster not that long ago. So that's what the Cardinals have to dig into. There aren't easy answers, but I do think, even though it's going to be a crazy offseason with all kinds of limitations in place due to the pandemic and all kinds of question marks about payroll, they have to try to find a way to get at improving this offense, whether it's coaching, whether it's talent that's in the lineup, or a little bit of both.
Yeah, that's the next factor, is that as we sit in the midst of the divisional round of the Major League Baseball playoffs, I don't even know if the industry knows what the off season will be like for the industry, you know, because in a normal year, after the World Series wraps up a couple of weeks later, you know, the industry is gathering for the GM meetings. That's where a lot of groundwork gets laid, both for, you know, the pending free agent class and also trades that will be made. And then from there, we move to the winter meetings. I mean, everything in baseball, they're all still gathering together as an industry. And, you know, who knows when we'll be able to do that in this country moving forward.
Well, there's so many question marks about this 2021 season that go beyond the question marks the Cardinals have. They don't know if fans are going to be in the stadium. They don't know if this is going to be a normal 2021 season, or if it will require another agreement between players and owners, which those seem to go over very well if we have memories that go back to last spring. So, you know, they don't really know. They have an idea, but they don't really know how much of a haircut they took this year in terms of revenue. You know, baseball teams make a lot of money, and anyone who tells you they don't is not telling the truth. However, they didn't make nearly as much money this year compared to what they usually make. And teams that operate their teams like a business, and the Cardinals are one of them, you would imagine you'll see some of those changes, you know, take place. Some of those changes reflected in the moves they make or don't make for the offseason. So there's a lot about this roster that's cumbersome in general. If it was a normal year, with some of the contracts that are going to be tough to move, and some of the you know, the commitments they've made, and then you throw in this chaos that was 2020, and things get even stickier. So the thing is, if fans are going to be in the stadium, and they're going to have to try to, you know, get back to selling tickets and impressing fans, then I do think they're going to have to do something that changes the look of this lineup a little bit. I think it's fair for fans to say, hey, this year was about going to this well of internal options and trying to find answers. But I don't know that you get every answer you want in a crazy 60-game season that was nearly derailed by 14 days off due to the virus. But you have to get some answers. You know, you can't ride out the same guys exactly and say, hey, we think just this more time will make this a different lineup. We're seeing, Chris, in this postseason what this expanded playoffs, and they're supposed to be sticking around, are going to look like. And it's power, power, power. Teams that hit more home runs tend to win. Not only are teams that, you know, it's not just teams that hit home runs and do nothing else. We're seeing teams that hit home runs and pitch well and play good defense, but the power is not there for the Cardinals. So they've got to find a way to either bring some in or generate it. And the free agents are going to be entering a fascinating offseason. There's going to probably be trades made by teams that are looking to, you know, decrease some payroll. So there's going to be wiggle room, and the Cardinals need to find a way to be involved in it.
You know, the other thing that maybe gets swept under the rug, because it's not a fun thing to consider or talk about, a player recently told me, like, the thing nobody's talking about is, what this season and what the expanded postseason, the toll it's going to take physically and the toll that it will take across the board for teams as they had to use more guys, push guys further, cover a lot more innings and cover a lot more innings quickly. Like, who knows from a timetable standpoint and, you know, the safety of the players and the safety of next year, assuming that everything is okay from a pandemic standpoint, just, you know, where everyone is at and if that changes the timetable for spring training and the season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we're going to see probably for years now what this season's impact is in all kinds of different ways. You know, I hope that there would be some positives that came out of it. Now, you know, in terms of maybe owners and players realizing they're better off together and maybe kind of taking some bitterness or some venom out of the pending, the upcoming CBA negotiations. I haven't gotten the sense that that's necessarily going to be the case based off of how tough it was to even get these guys into a bubble for the postseason when it was clear that it was the best obvious choice. So baseball is in a precarious place. And, you know, with everything from rule changes to what 2021 will look like to players and whatever frustrations have come up from the way the league has or hasn't handled the pandemic season. So there's a lot going on. And that's kind of what makes the Cardinals season so fascinating is I think on one hand, you have to commend them for getting to the postseason after nearly being derailed. I mean, they were probably one or two positive cases away during that outbreak from having their season tabled entirely. So you applaud them for making the postseason and all they had to weather to get there. But in some ways, they kind of ended up right back where they were entering spring training, where we knew this was a team that could pitch and play defense. We wondered about the lineup. And here we are again after a very, very long, strange trip to the same kind of place we were entering the 2021 season. So, some of the questions are hard to answer. Some of them are easy to answer. And that's the Cardinals have to try to find a way to get a little more slugging in that lineup. I don't think they need to be world beaters. I don't think they need to be the Yankees. But they have to be a little more dangerous of a team offensively, a little more able to do some crooked damage and put up some crooked numbers.
I guess the one area where things are thriving is the actual product on the field. And the playoffs have been really fun to watch, man, from, you know, not just the competition to some of the storylines, some of the emotion that's popped up and the little subplots that is going on between certain teams, certain players. We could theoretically have an Astros-Dodgers matchup. It's just the playoffs themselves, I think from like an entertainment standpoint and a television standpoint, when we all said a few months ago, well, at least we might get like a couple months of, you know, sports bliss. We're getting that right now, and it's gone off pretty well without a hitch across the board, I guess.
Man, it's been fun to watch. I mean, it's been power-packed games, and we're
thanks to Randy Arozarena and Luke Voit.
We're seeing some, but it's not just those guys. I mean, we're seeing, I think this for a 2-0 series. I mean, so full disclosure, we're recording this late Thursday night, but the Dodgers Padres series has been way more fun than that series outcome indicates. That game two that they played was one of the best games I've watched all year. Between the defense with in the pitching that we saw, it was just it was outstanding. The Marlins Braves was kind of a dud, but I think it's pretty cool the Marlins got as far as they did. But the story is the Astros. Yeah, how about that? Talking about the Cardinals and their flat earthers, that stirred up a nice couple headlines here in St. Louis. He's great at that, by the way. I think he'll be killer at that if he decides to do that in the future. I think he might want to pitch a little bit more before he makes that transition, but he'll be great at that whenever he decides to do that as much as he wants to. The story, though, is the Astros, man. I mean, they sneak into this thing, and now they don't look like a team that snuck in. They look like a team that's out for revenge. And as much as it is fun to root against them, they're good.
They're really good. And they also have a guy on display for the baseball world who will be probably the preeminent free agent this offseason from an outfield perspective. George Springer is just so good. They look like the Astros from a couple of years ago. So, again, insert your jokes as necessary. But, yeah, that story just got swept under the rug to some extent. And I know we've talked about that. But now that they're reemerging, could you imagine if it was the Astros and the Dodgers? And who knows what would end up happening, especially if Joe Kelly's involved.
I think Rob Manfred, when he goes to sleep at night, both dreams of this happening and wants it to happen, and also has nightmares about it.
Because everyone would watch. Hey,
I'll tell you this one, we'd all be watching. And man, you're dead on about Springer. And I've about talked myself into thinking the Cardinals need to go get this guy for a few reasons.
What do you
one,
mean about?
I'm so anti-Astros, and I'm over. Yeah. I just don't want to touch anything Houston related. Yeah. However, this guy's been better. Chris, he's been better in the past 2 years than he was in 17. He crushes home runs from the leadoff spot. He can play multiple outfield positions. He's a beast in October. He was the one player there who was actually genuinely kind of remorseful when this news hit, unlike his colleagues who all turned heel. I think he would be a good fit for this Cardinals outfield that you're trying to not, you know, put a ceiling over Carlson. You're trying to, you know, you got to get rid of somebody, but you don't know who yet. And he's going to be expensive, don't get me wrong, but he's 31 and he's not going to be Manny Machado, Bryce Harper expensive, where he demands that 10-year contract that the Cardinals just aren't going to give somebody. So I've just about talked myself into the fact that, hey, if George Springer wants to sign up to play for the Cardinals and the Cardinals want to come up with the money to do it, I don't think there'd be too many fans booing him on opening day if they're back in the seats.
Yeah, 39 home runs in 122 games last year.
And his strikeout rate is it's the record low right now. It's he's striking out 17% of the time. He's not just a power guy. He's a good hitter. And that's what the Cardinals need. When I say they need power, I don't mean they go out and sign a bunch of home run strikeout guys. They just need guys who do more damage. And if you put Springer at the top of the lineup, you push everybody else down. You take that responsibility away from Colton Wong. If he's back, if you pick up that option, then your defense is still great. And you've got a much more kind of authentic-looking October-level lineup.
All right, so we'll table the Cardinals off-season conversation for now because, you know, there will be plenty of off-season for the Cardinals, for the Blues as well. It'll be weird, Ben, just we're so used to the way things move along. And after the Cardinals season, whether it's, you know, a thrilling playoff run or a season that ends in September too early, you get excited to watch the Blues. And now there will not be NHL hockey, obviously, until fall goes well, I guess, January and the Winter Classic. So there will be a couple of months where there's this void, especially on the St. Louis sports scene. And right down the road, you've got the University of Missouri and their new football coach and the Ed Orgeron circus coming to town to Columbia this weekend. Do you think the program is in a place where they can grab some eyes and some attention, even if it's understood that it's going to take a while for the product on the field to match the excitement about the product that they're trying to surround?
Well, I wrote before the season, and I still stick by it. I think this season for Missouri is about going out and grabbing a big upset. If it's one win, but it's against a ranked team and Eli Drinkwitz's first year, I think that's something that you hold up and say, hey, this is a coach who had basically his entire spring schedule pulled out from beneath him due to COVID. He did not have a feel for the roster and was really limited in what he could do. And it's a team that got thrown a curveball of an all SEC schedule in a guy's first season. Give the fans something they can say, man, this is moving in the right direction. And I think that's a realistic expectation. There's going to be upsets all across college football all season long. We're already starting to see some of them. I mean, look what Mike Leach did in his first week against LSU, right? And that's going to continue. I mean, maybe it happens on Saturday against LSU, a team that has already lost a big upset, and one that has to, you know, scramble to play its game in Columbia instead of Baton Rouge with the threat of a hurricane hanging over its head. You know, there just isn't going to be a chalk season in any of these seasons. There's too much unknown. So I do think Missouri can jump up and beat somebody it's really not supposed to beat. Will it be on Saturday? I don't know, but that I think should be the goal. Most Missouri fans, I feel like, are realistic. They want to see the team get better week to week. They want to see an impression of where Drinkwitz has this thing going. They know what the recruiting class he has coming in is going to be, where his bread is buttered or not. And they're excited about the future. And I think there is, especially in that week one game, a lot to be positive about with how they played against Alabama. I thought they maybe took a step back against Tennessee. but they want to get back on the right track against LSU. They got to stop dropping passes. They should be helped out by the fact that they now have a clear picture, I think, of the quarterback position. Connor Bazelak looked like he could be the starter in week one. However, they went back to Sean Robinson in week two. I understand why. But clearly now, after the way Bazelak played at Rocky Top, he's the guy, man. He's got a better deep ball, more poise. I think he's a better SEC caliber quarterback, and now they're going to commit to him as the starter, and that should, I think, bring some more momentum to the offense now that they know who their quarterback, who their top quarterback is.
This would actually be the kind of perfect storm, right? And kind of the Mizzou moment with no fans already allowed to get to games, and then a game that was not even supposed to be played in front of no fans here. It was supposed to be played in front of no fans somewhere else. So it's like a double weird situation. And, you know, LSU still comes in as a two-touchdown favorite, 17th-ranked team in the country, the defending national champions. And why not, man? It's not like they've impressed me over the first 2 weeks compared to, you know, what Missouri's already seen. So why not? It would be just perfectly apropos of this weird year and the way that things usually go for the Missouri Tigers and their fans, that this would be the week in the midst of all this insanity when no one can witness it in person, that they'd beat LSU.
Man, you never know. I mean, this year is going to be one where you have to watch Saturday, because I'm telling you, there's going to be upsets every single week. You know, LSU is still good. Now, they lost a ton. They lost a ton from their quarterback, Joe Burrow, to their passing coordinator, Joe Brady, and they've replaced some talented players. So they're not the power, you know, the Death Star that they were last year, but they're still a really good team. And they're way more advanced and ahead of where Drinkwitz has his team in year one. But look, the good thing about Missouri's season is you're playing with house money. No one expects you to win these games against these ranked teams. So go out and take advantage of it. You know, play carefree, play without that pressure. And, you know, if you do that enough and you play well enough, then you'll catch somebody on a bad day and you'll pull out an upset. So the signature win, it's a staple of the SEC. Every coach who has done anything in the SEC has a win in the early and maybe not so successful starts of their time at a program, where they point back and they say, this is when people who supported me knew that I could do this here. And that's really, I think, what Drinkwitz is hunting for this season.
You know what the biggest positive for me? I say that tongue in cheek, but it is, in a sense, if you're going to have a year when you can't have fans in the stadium, like, this is the year, right? And it's nice to not have to have my Twitter timeline all of a sudden at kickoff be filled with a couple of folks who stumbled their way into a credential, looked up from the buffet, and then took the picture of some empty seats and made a, you know, a snarky comment about it on Twitter. I'm so over that. That doesn't do any good for anyone. We get it. Attendance hasn't been good. You have to win, blah, 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 blah. But at least this year, it's like, you know what? Even if it's not great, then we don't need to then spend a couple of days saying, how do we get people to go to the games? We'll deal with that next year when I think the team will have proven why you should be in the stands.
Well, it's so weird to talk about an SEC season being almost a free pass, because that's kind of the opposite of what the conference is all about. However, it would pretty much feel disingenuous to analyze this season based off a win total. At least it would for me. And Eli Drinkwitz announced on Thursday night, Chris, that seven guys on this team are not going to be available on Saturday because of COVID. There's like one positive test and six people who are in close contact with the positive. And he's not saying who they are, but he kind of hinted that it might be some players who are prominent. Which, I mean, that's this season. I mean, you can wake up on a Thursday morning as a college football coach and not, you know, and find out you don't have key players for your game on Saturday. So really going to Harry Hot Take on a win total feels a little silly to me. And there are times when that's just, and there will be times in Eli Drinkwitz's future when it's, hey, it's time to win this many games, or the pressure will be kicked up a notch. But doing that in year one, when he was limited to like two spring practices, and he spent most of this time trying to figure out how to keep guys from getting COVID. Yeah, it feels a little tough. So what do you look for? You look for improvement. You look for these younger players like a Trajan Jeffcoat on the defensive line making plays. You look for the development of Connor Bazelak. You look for a better performance from each line, offensive and defense, over the course of the season. I do think there are things you can weigh in on, but you know, hinging it on a win total is not going to be a very accurate judge. So I look for development, and I look for a way that Drinkwitz can say, hey, these are signs that we're moving in the right direction.
Have you caught any buzz about the Big Ten? Because I know up in Chicago, and when I've talked to friends up there, like folks for their respective schools they root for are fired up. But you know, from a big picture perspective, and in the region, can you sense any excitement? I guess with what we've all been going through, it's hard right now to look too forward to anything. Let's just deal with what's in front of us, and then hopefully, you know, the Big Ten is still playing football when we get to that point in a couple of weeks. But anything bubbling up at all in your perspective?
I think it's one of those things where it's going to sneak up on people. And then, like, when it's here, it's like overload, you know. And then where it's really going to pop off, man, I'm telling you, is when it comes time to talk about the college football playoff. And then that is when the nation will realize that, wait a second, these teams have different looking schedules, and these teams have played at different times, and it's going to be a nightmare, and it's going to be a nightmare, and it will be probably the most contested college football playoff pool ever. And I wish they would have expanded it and taken a page from MLB and just said, hey, we'll just put 8 in. However, they just I guess, decided they're not going to do that. And I think they can make up rules as long as they want. I mean, as of 3 days ago, Missouri was playing this game in Baton Rouge. So nothing is in pen these days. But I thought it would have been a good year to do that. However, I doubt it's going to happen. Unfortunately, college football leaders are not nearly as nimble as some of their peers in the college basketball world or other sports. But we'll see. And hopefully the Big Ten can finish. You know, it feels a little too shaky predicting anything out more than a week or so. But it is nice to have – I'll tell you, it's nice to have college football back. It's nice to be able to drive over to Columbia and watch a game. Surreal not seeing people in the parking lots tailgating and seeing, you know, socially distanced fans, you know, about 11,000 people. But it's better than nothing, and the players are enjoying it and having fun, and it is better than the alternative. So I just hope it stays on the right track.
Well, and let's wrap up with that locally, because there will be high school football inside St. Louis County limits this weekend for the first time this year. Schools were allowed to present their own individual plans to the health department, and if approved, they are able to play. So instead of CBC and DeSmet playing in Festus, they'll play at DeSmet. They're, you know, one of your colleagues, David Quidall, reported that facility generally could have about 1,200 people there if it's packed. They'll have about 250 to 280. It'll be immediate family members. There will be, you know, a lot of work to be done in terms of preparation for tracing that is hopefully not necessary. But were you surprised, Ben, that this started to move pretty quickly and that football now is going to be back inside, at least for the time being, St. Louis County in just a couple of days?
Well, I'm thrilled. And I know that, like, Sam Page is like the easiest person to beat up on these days, but I'll give him credit for saying all along, hey, if things improve, if these numbers in that age range drop, we'll revisit and reconsider our plans. And he was true to his word. So I think some credit goes his way, although he's not a popular person to thank. The resiliency of the kids and the coaches has to be pointed to and celebrated. They hung in there, and I know that some are shifting to that spring schedule, and some have decided not to turn back. It's going to be an awkward thing. I mean, you'll have like some teams playing like 3 games right before the playoffs start, but there is still a chance like some basically like friendlies could be played, you know, outside of the high school playoffs, kind of like the Turkey Day game here in St. Louis. So hopefully they can get some more game, an adequate number of games in. But most importantly, I'm just glad they're going to be back out there. And I hope that the folks who want this to keep happening and want this to stay going are being mindful that they're part of the reason that it's going to happen or not happen. You know, what we do when we're out and about in our lives is going to affect the things we can and can't do, whether we're talking about going to games to watch or going to games to play. I think, you know, we're all kind of on the same team here when it comes to hoping to get this stuff off the ground. And that has to be remembered. But I'm mostly thrilled for the kids, man. high school football for me was huge. I loved it. I played it. I made some of my best friends in life doing it. And the idea of losing a senior season especially is crushing. So I'm glad that they get, it's going to be awkward and different, but it's better than seeing that go up in thin air. So I know that they're going to be eager to get out there and play. And we've already seen some teams that had long layoffs that are looking pretty good. So that should be a hell of a game Saturday. I know you're going to be there and on the call, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing play-by-play. And I couldn't be more excited just because I haven't gotten to be in the mix or be on the call of a football game this year at all. Generally in the fall, it's a part of what I'm doing. And it's, you know, maybe the two best teams in the state, two teams that, met at the end of last year, obviously with DeSmet en route to their incredible march towards a state championship, beating CBC. It'll be great, man. And two coaches who just totally get it, right? Like I talked to Scott today, and obviously Robert does an amazing job at DeSmet. Like those are guys that have been with these kids now since they started workouts around, I guess, in May. Most teams started whatever they could start. And they've had to manage a lot of disappointment, a lot of questions, and a lot of uncertainty. And I'm just happy for them as well to get to, you know, finally just play a game and for a couple of hours just do what they do. I hope that it all goes off without a hitch, and I am really excited.
Yeah, and congrats to those coaches and the players. I'm just – go out and have fun, boys, because you made it and you put up with all the waiting and the precautions and time to go out and play your game. So once they get out there and once that snap happens, then it'll be football and it'll look weird when they look up and see the stands. So, but on the field, it's the same. That's what I hear from guys, even playing baseball said, yeah, it's strange with no fans, but especially in the playoffs, when that moment is, the moment is real and the game is real and it hasn't changed. The what's around it has changed. But you're seeing in the playoffs, especially in baseball, that the moment, the game, it's authentic. So it will be the same. It will be the same for Friday Night Lights.
What would you do if I sent out a tweet 5 minutes before the game of the socially distanced stands and said, 5 minutes before the game, a little disappointing to see all the empty seats at DeSmet?
You joke, but I'm sure there would be some who fell for it.
Could you imagine?
Must be traffic. No, man, have a good call and enjoy it. And yeah, man, that's going to be good. So I'm all for having a plethora of sports to cover here. So it was pretty thin there for a while. So it's much better now. And it's good to catch up with you, man. And welcome to the team. Welcome to the Scoops team. Did you get a polo yet? Danny's got polos. Don't let him hold out on you.
Dude, a polo, these hats are slick. These are some big time hats.
He takes that out of your check. Watch him.
I will leave the hat at the station and only wear it when I'm on company property. Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Read him in the paper. Read him at stltoday.com. Follow him on Twitter at Ben_Fred. Great job, man. You guys continue to just find the stories that are important to people. So here's to, again, yeah, good weekend. Everyone staying safe and just more and more sports continuing to come back because that means more takes from Harry. We'll talk to you next Friday.